Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Lawyer Raina, and we are finishing up the sci-fi zombies with a vampire-slash-zombie movie from the middle 80s, from 1985, called Life Force. Tagline, in outer space, they unleashed a force more evil than the world had ever imagined.
They sure tried.
Directed by Toby Hooper, written by, never heard of him, by the way.
No, not heard of that one.
Written by Colin Wilson, based on the novel, The Space Vampires. That was the book that he wrote. And it was actually written by Dan O'Bannon, who did the scripts for both Alien, the original movie, and, of course, Return of the Living Dead. In fact, I think he was supposed to direct this movie, but then they offered him Return of the Living Dead, and so he went and did that one instead of directing this.
I mean, good choices were made.
I feel like that's the case.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he wrote it with Don Jacoby. Music by Henry Mancini. Budget of $25 million. It made only 11.6, so it didn't lose money.
Damn.
Yeah, it's this is a cult classic movie. It's not one that blew up the box office, obviously. So,
is one of the prerequisites to becoming a cult classic is that you have to lose money or barely make any?
That's a big part of it because, well, I mean, otherwise, if it's popular, then it's just a hit, you know.
Yeah.
So, it has to at least not like really done well, and then like later on, like a group of dedicated fans picked it up and just ran with it.
25 million. I'm trying to find a comparison to another movie we have reviewed that had a similar budget and also did not. I feel like we just reviewed one that had a high, but maybe it wasn't even from the 80s though. Maybe it was Sliver.
Did that
one have a high budget and not a good return?
I feel like Sliver had a decent, budget, but
I feel like that one lost money. Yeah, I mean, it's a couple episodes ago, but that's weeks for us.
Yeah, I think it did lose money overall. So
okay, so the $25 million to me is a lot of money in 1985.
It is. I don't really have a basis to go off of at the moment, whether or not like I'm trying to think of like movies like, around 1985, like say Back to the Future. If you want to look up the budget on it, just as a comparison, while I kind of start going over some of the principal players. We have Matilda May playing Space Girl. That's the only name they give her in the entire script. And at the end of the credits, she is our space vampire, and she is the naked lady who has the nice boobies throughout the movie.
Oh, my God. She has a nice body, and she's pretty.
She was, I want to say she was a dancer, and that's one of the reasons why they wanted this movie, because she didn't come at it from like an acting point of view. It was like all, like where she was a dancer, she was used to like physically embodying, like, and that's what the character was, so they that's why they specifically chose a dancer for the part.
Okay, and like a dancer. I was thinking a stripper for a minute.
No, she was like a professional, I don't know if it's ballet dancer, but it was something along that line.
I thought she was a model based off of the shape of her body. She had a nice shape, but not look like she was over-exercised, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I was like, she must be a model. That's why when you said dance, I was thinking, man, strippers are kind of cut sometimes, you know?
No, a different type. And she, it's funny because, like, there was only, like, one part in this movie that she felt, like, really uncomfortable in her own skin. And I want to say that it was maybe during, and I hopefully I've still got it in the notes, but, like, it wasn't just her walking around naked. Like, she was able to get over that and deal with it. But, like, there was one scene in the movie where it was like she was actually covered up. And I think it was during the scene where she's forming, like, out of blood in the helicopter.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of cool.
And just the way that they had to do that and apply the makeup made her very self-conscious. That was like the part of the movie she actually, like, you know, the Emperor's clothes were noticed or whatever, for yeah. her mentally at least.
Huh. Real quick, Back to the Future. So depending on what you're looking at, the budget was either $19 million or $40 million. But either way, it grossed like $330 million.
Oh, plus. Yeah. I mean, it's a massive hit. But that... So if this is in the same wheelhouse as Back to the Future, give or take.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a pretty big budget then overall.
Yeah. And Back to the Future, I know I haven't seen the movie completely through all the way. And I know you're so surprised by that. And I know I'm just coming at you with this information like.
I'm shaking my head, folks. I know you can't see it. But that's what
we need
I'm
to
doing.
Get on Twitch or something. We need to get video so people can see our reactions. But anyways, that being said, from what I have seen, way better looking than this movie. And this movie isn't terrible. I'm not gonna bash it yet or anything. But like, Back to the Future, way better looking.
It's a difference of just like what they were going for, but at the same time, this movie's weird in the sense that like the special effects, we talked about when we covered Poltergeist that, you know, that had the feeling of a Spielberg movie. Mm-hmm. It's funny we're comparing it with this with Back to the Future since Spielberg was with Zemeckis and kind of, but, we said that it had, you know, like Spielbergian feel to it. But there are scenes in this movie that clearly show that Tobe Hooper did direct, the majority of Poltergeist, because there's little flashes of light in this that are similar to in Poltergeist, like the way that it's filmed, some of the creature design. So, it reminded me of Poltergeist several times watching this.
Yeah. Just
on like the visual part of it. So I think that Tobe did have a hand in it, even if he. Like, I feel like the movie had a Spielbergian feel because Spielberg, like, had his, you know, stamp on Poltergeist, but, you know, the visuals and all that were coming straight from Tobe Hooper. So, all the things saying that he didn't really direct the movie, I feel bullshit after watching this at least. So, Matilda May was in The Jackal and The Cry of the Owl. She was, she got a little bit of a career. She actually did not speak a lick of English when she was filming this movie, which is good because she had to speak, but because she was working with British actors, she sat and listened to them and actually picked up pretty quickly, according to all the cast, I think she's French or something.
Okay.
So she picked up a lot of English, like working on this movie, proper English. She said that it was funny trying to listen to Tobe though, because he's got a thick Texan accent.
Oh shit.
And so she was learning English from these British guys. And then when he would talk, it was kind of throwing her for a loop because like the Texan accent was not jiving with her.
It would be like having a conversation with you.
Yeah, kind of. and it's funny too, because hearing he might have lost accent over time, as thick as it was, but hearing Tobe Hooper on like the special features talk about the movie, and of course he's passed away, but you know, like later on, like I didn't feel like he had much of an accent, so I was just like, what the fuck are they talking about? It had a twinge, but it wasn't real country or anything, so I don't know.
My family, the Spaniards, they came from Texas, and we have this random Texas honky that comes out of us, which is hilarious. If you see the Spaniards, they kind of look white on my side of the family. But anyways, that being said, we have some words we say, and I've said a few of them to you, and it doesn't sound very – well, obviously I'm from California, so I have a California accent, but it doesn't sound very – it's not like from where you're from is what I'm getting at. Like we say things like I hate you and yump too and things like that. That's the weirdest stuff that comes out of us. And I look Mexican, so that looks weird coming out of me. My Spaniard family, not so much. Like I said, they look white, but I didn't get that from Tobe Hooper, so I don't know what she's...
No.
Yeah. But I do want to say, though, about her, not just a pretty face and a gorgeous body, she's smart. If you could there and listen to people have a conversation and that's how you're picking up, I'm still trying to learn Spanish and I'm Mexican.
Yeah, she ended up learning, I want to say that she ended up learning like 3 or 4 different languages after this. Like,
fucking
I mean, just
shit. We don't, here in America, we don't know shit about shit.
No. And it's funny, too, because you go back to the accent. I church it up for you all. Like, it could be a lot worse than what you're hearing. So
that is true, because I speak fast, but outside of the podcast, I speak a lot faster. You have mentioned this. My daughter is the worst.
Yeah. She speaks real quick, so.
She sounds like that guy from King of the Hill.
What, Boomhauer, the one that's just speaking a mile a minute?
Anyways.
We have Steve Rails back, who plays kind of our hero in this, Colonel Tom Carlson. It's weird because this movie is basically Dracula in outer space. There's a lot of like things they lifted from that story, and he's a combination of Renfield and both Quincy Morris in the sense that he's Renfield because he's the one that she's using to kind of like mentally control to a certain extent and kind of, exude her will on everything. But at the end of the movie, he turns on her and actually has the hero moment where he kills her, kind of like Quincy and, you know, does toward the end of Dracula. So,
oh my God.
He was in Helter Skelter, Barbed Wire of all things. Ready or Not, he was actually in that movie when we covered it. An episode of Supernatural and Alligator 2, The Mutation. So ooh, we might be seeing him again.
Yes, when bad animals go bad.
Peter Firth plays Colonel Colin Kane, the Jonathan Harker stand-in. He was in The Hunt for Red October and Pearl Harbor. Frank Finlay plays Dr. Hans Falada, who is the Van Helsing, obviously Van Helsing stand-in. Doesn't turn out so well for him, though, and has the worst – he has the worst line for somebody who's dying that I've ever heard in a movie, but I've got that in quotes. We'll get to it. He was actually – Frank Finlay actually played in A Christmas Carol, the one that we covered previously that had why am I blanking on his name? George C. Scott as like Scrooge, the 80s one or whatever.
Okay.
He played the creepy Jacob Marley in that, actually like he untied the ribbon holding his jaw from like, you know.
Love that one. Oh, that's a good Christmas horror film for the kids. It really is. And it's not even supposed to be horror, but.
No, they just did a very good job of actually taking the novel and doing what the novel did.
I wanted to say something real quick, and I'm not sure if you're going to get this. I'm not sure if I'm picking the right character. I want to say it was the character that played Colin Kane, the one who was looking up at the end of the movie.
Yes.
Okay, so that was Peter Firth. No.
Yeah, he was the one that ran in at the end of the movie and saw the two of them get blasted in outer space or whatever.
Perfect. Okay, so that character, he was giving me Loomis vibes for some reason.
Yeah, he was kind of like that. I mean,
but Jonathan Harker makes way more sense. I wasn't getting the vampiric, the Dracula references until you started laying them out for me right here. But I was like, at first, when I was watching it, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking Loomis.
Yeah, well, they and this last one, never heard of this guy, Patrick Stewart. Mm-mm. Played Dr. Armstrong. This is the one that cemented it for me because I kind of was getting those vibes, but whenever they actually had the mental institution where the people were, you know, like turning and raving vampires inside of it, and he was one over it. I mean, he's clearly a stand-in for Dr. Seward in the original Dracula story.
That makes way more sense.
And Patrick Stewart, I mean, it's Jean-Luc Picard. Come on, people.
Come on, guys. I mean,
but he has been also, you know, Professor Xavier, and he's in a horror movie that we will be covering in human horror called Green Room. And he actually plays a bad guy in that. I mean, a pretty good one.
Is human horror? We have to do that after when bad animals go bad.
Yeah, I mean it.
I know you're ready to get it over with.
Yeah. Human horror's got some good stuff in it. Like, I've just been, I mean, it's actually got too much stuff to cover, but We'll just have to pick and choose on that one. We're going to have creepy kids in that season, though.
Yes.
Because I want to cover the good son, if nothing else.
Oh, the good son. That's so good. You know, speaking of kid stuff, I know we used to discuss, hey, what are you doing? How's your day been going? What you been watching? You know, I had the best sleep, not this week, last week. I had the best nap to Children of the Corn. I have never been so soothed in my life.
So I take it that was a Raina coma on that one then?
It was a coma, but it wasn't because it was a snooze fest. As far as I remember, I like that film. Don't take my word for it. I don't know if we're saving that for human horror or not. But, like, it was the music and the background noise and everything. Oh, my God. I was soothed, y'all. That was white noise for me.
I mean, we could. We also discussed the Stephen King season, so obviously that would fall under that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We can put it. We have a lot for human horror. I'm sure we will. So
yeah, we've got.
I'm not worried. There's
another Killer Kids movie called Mikey that I was thinking about also pairing with A Good Son. But there's plenty of creepy kid movies. So that's not like the You know, all of that.
We'll have plenty for you guys. Hey, you know what? It's early too. If you have any suggestions of anything you think you want us to review for When Bad Animals Go Bad or human horror, those are the next upcoming seasons. Just know it's going to be a while because we're still in zombie season. Zed or dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So the ones that I have right now in plan, there's plenty of others besides serial killers because those are easy to throw in.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy kids and then murderous nannies because The Hand That Rocks the Cradle and all those type movies are big ones too.
Oh, that movie got on my nerves when I was a kid. It was a good one, though. Anyways.
Synopsis for this film, a British-American space shuttle called the Churchill ventures into the coma of Halley's Comet, where they find a strange spaceship. Inside are desiccated bat-like humanoids and three perfect human corpses preserved in some type of crystalline coffins. Taking one of the bat-like creatures and the three humans aboard, the Churchill leaves to make its way back to Earth. Later, a rescue mission is mounted to find out what the fuck happened to it, because it's now radio silent, and everything on board was destroyed by a fire except for the three crystalline coffins. Taking them back to Earth, the dead female is extracted from her coffin and begins feeding upon others, draining their life force, aka the movie title, from their bodies and leaving behind desiccated energy zombies. The only surviving member of the Churchill resurfaces when his escape pod is found off the coast of Texas, and the search begins for the beautiful woman from space. There's panic in the streets of London. Colonel Carlson is steadily coming undone, and Matilda May is mesmerizing. In the blink of an eye, the terror begins.
Ooh, that's not a bad tagline.
Here's some other ones for you. The cinematic sci-fi event of the 80s. No. And it's not when you consider all the other. I mean, we had aliens.
Yes.
No. With an insatiable hunger, they are coming. Mankind is their prey.
Okay, that sounds like it could be dirty.
Yeah.
Insatiable was how I was the other day when I was low in iron and I needed me some red meat.
Some quotes from this movie. NASA man, I'd say she's perfect. I've been in space for 6 months and she looks perfect to me.
I mean, come on now, the bar's got to be low, but she was perfect. Like,
yeah, she was.
You've been in space, you know. Like a stick is going to look amazing to you.
Dr. Hans Falada, I mean, in a sense, we're all vampires. We drain energy from other life forms. The difference is one of degree. That girl was no girl. She's totally alien to this planet and our life form and totally dangerous. Colonel Tom Carlson, she's resisting. I'm going to have to force her to tell me, despite appearances, This woman is a masochist, an extreme masochist. She wants me to force the name out of her. She wants me to hurt her. I can see the images in her mind. You want to stay, otherwise wait outside. And then of course, Colonel Colin Kane responds back to him. Not at all. I'm a natural voyeur.
That scene to me was a bit much. I was like, wow.
That's the scene right after that is where you get a lot of the poltergeist light effects because they're in that room. It's spinning around and then the lights are like, you know, like in Poltergeist, whenever like they're trying to, like the house is attacking, you know, Zelda Rubinstein or whatever, and then, you know, like they're the ghosts are fighting back or the spirits.
Yeah,
it had a lot of that vibe going on as far as the imagery. The space girl at the end of the movie says the web of destiny carries your blood and soul back to the genesis of my life form. And then the exit line for Dr. Hans Falada, the worst I've ever heard. He gets stabbed and he's getting pulled back into the, you know, to where they're harvesting them. And all he says is, "Here I go.
Here I go again on my own."
Going down the only road I've ever known.
Oh my God.
All right, visuals. Let's get into the movie here. And folks, it has been a bit since I've watched it, so I'm going to rely on Urena here to kind of, you know, piece together some things for me. But, and I messed up the last time I watched this. I did not watch the director's cut, and the theatrical cut of this movie is the worst cut of the movie. Like, it is so choppy. Like, the story is kind of like, you can get it, but it takes a lot more work than the director's cut version of it. But anyways, of course, Matilda May. I mean, if we're talking about visuals, I mean, she's stunning in this movie.
Yes.
But like the zombies are kind of cool at times, like the look of them. But they've kind of got like a puppet feel to them too. That's not like, I don't know. It's a weird vibe. Like I think it's like the desiccated look.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But like they look like kind of like papery puppets, you know, at times.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, it's the movements. The movements just, I know they're not supposed to be natural, but these are supposed to be, well, I guess they're supposed to be aliens. Are they humans that we're trying to think? What are these three bodies? Because she's not human.
Okay, so in the lore, you know all those bats they found in outer space?
Freaking bats, yes.
They're those things, but and they had to feed on their own kind.
Oh yeah,
so
they
that's
do
the
turn
reason
into...
the rest of them are dead.
Okay,
so technically she looks like those, but she can project out and make herself appear like the most appealing thing that like the species on whatever planet she lands on. You know, her and the other two males.
Aren't they taking over? I thought they took over people's bodies. That's how they acquired that look.
That body that she's in, that she's walking around, that's perfect, is her body.
Mm-hmm.
It's, but she can project her mind out in other people's bodies because she does it
okay.
a couple times in the movie or whatever. Like when she has the one psych nurse, like, you know, getting freaky with that guy, and then like she sucks the life force out of him or whatever at that point.
Yeah, I just think that it's the movements, the jerkiness of it. And I don't know what they were trying to project with that. I don't know if they're trying to project that, hey, I'm dead, and so these are my movements, or this is not my natural form, so this is my movements, or that's just how it came out. I don't know, but it was kind of got on my nerves.
There's a couple of scenes in the movie where Carlson and Colin or whatever are trying to make their way to the mausoleum where she is at. And they get attacked by zombies along the way, some of the life force zombies. Those look all right because they kind of remind you of regular, like,
yes.
Actually pretty decently done zombies because they got more meat on them and they're, like, attacking people. But, like, the ones that are laying in a pile in front of the you know, like, mausoleum
yeah.
or whatever, and the one that's on the table at the beginning of the movie that they when they originally discover it before it comes back to life, they also had like a Poltergeist feel, but like, you know, like they had, but it's more like that puppet, you know, like undead look that they were going for in Poltergeist. That's why I said that it had a lot of those vibes as far as the visuals.
Yeah.
I will give them credit though. Those bat monsters and that floating, like, you know, spaceship, I thought they did a pretty good job on those. Like, I mean,
I thought the bat monster
for
looked
making
good.
It. And they did a good job on the feeling of like this weird spaceship or whatever towards the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
The look of the like London when it's basically being attacked or wherever they're at, like the chaos of it. They made it feel appropriately like, you know, apocalyptic and that sort of thing. So I feel like that worked. I don't know. There's other moments in this movie that it feels low budget and it shouldn't have for the budget they had. I don't know where they spent the money at necessarily on that.
Yeah, I'm looking at a scene right now because I'm kind of just doing, you know, I'm going back to looking at the quotation mark zombies. It is kind of hard to tell with the, okay, there's the zombies. I'm like, it is kind of hard. Yeah. I don't know. You're right. The zombies look like zombies. They don't look like those puppets and everything, but their makeup basically is just a bunch of like gray. They look like they got ashes thrown all over their face.
Yeah, they have kind of,
or all over their entire body. Actually, that'd be kind of it. Actually, think about it. If you wouldn't be safe, but if you wanted to quickly get somebody done up like a zombie, fucking just dump all over a bunch of ashes all over a bunch of people, have them bathe in it, fucking rub it in their hair, rub it on their face, good to go.
Yeah, that kind of work. I mean, was there anything about the visuals that stood out to you, good or bad?
Bad, yes. Okay, so I know this was a couple years later, but 1989 we got Ghostbusters 2.
Yes.
You kind of picking up what I'm throwing down in the sky when they had, like, in Ghostbusters when you had the sky. Again, I understand this is technically 4 years later, but
yeah.
Yes, it looked bad now when we're watching Ghostbusters 2 now. But this was whatever they were trying to do in the sky with the visuals, not digging it at all. In terms of, like, I don't know that whatever light force, or I know they're trying to make it look like a life force. I don't know. I wasn't feeling it. It was basically the end of the movie.
One other thing, we already mentioned it, and Matilda May, whenever that one part when she felt uncomfortable, her body forming out of blood, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. It's not terrible.
It's an all right scene as far as the visuals go.
I thought it looked cool, and I think the sound effects helped it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, really, this movie, I mean, I think the reason it caught on is because of the visuals, because really, I mean, getting in, you know, moving on a little bit to the story.
Yeah.
The story is just literally Dracula, more modern day, I mean, as of the 80s at least, with some space stuff going on. And I don't know if the original book that this is based off on is cribbed all that stuff, but they definitely did in the movie. And so it's not really original. And I mean, And the way that they cut it apart to make it for the theatrical version, there's a lot of like interstitial scenes that explain some stuff that are just kind of left hanging out there. So it feels choppy. And it's like, if you're going by the theatrical, what was released to movie theaters version of it.
When did you realize that this was kind of Bram Stoker's Dracula, or just Dracula in general?
I think I'm maybe even the first time I watched it, but I definitely on this rewatch, okay. Like, I mean, I couldn't help it. Like, it was right from the beginning. I didn't get that at all.
I didn't get that at all from this movie. I was totally in a realm of another film, obviously, as I discussed with you. Like, oh, I remind you of Loomis. I don't know. I'm doing when I'm watching films? I don't know what I'm doing when I'm watching films.
It's not a bad thing that it steals from Dracula. I mean, Dracula is one of the best vampire novels, but I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's novelty is more the space stuff that it adds to it. And I mean, that's whether you like that or not, is your mileage may vary on that part of it.
Yeah. Story was really, okay. Now that you've pointed out to me that it's, you know, kind of Dracula-ish, it's kind of cool. Not gonna lie, and like, I mean, the idea that they were trying to form, the execution, not great at all. Because I didn't even get that. You got it. That's great.
I think there's more of it in the director's cut. Okay. Like it plods that out, or it plots it out a little bit better that way.
I don't know which cut I watched. I tried to see. I watched it on Amazon Prime Video, and it isn't necessarily telling me what cut it was. So all I know is that it apparently is an hour and 42 minutes long on the cut that I watched. So
let's see. Yeah, I don't know. It says that the director's cut, if you just look it up online, says that it's 128 minutes versus theatrical being 116 minutes.
Interesting.
It's little things or throughout the movie. It's not even like, not all of them are like, you know, there's not one huge scene. I think they did add some more stuff about why they were rescuing the spaceship or whatever, because they've just kind of been floating out there. There was a little bit more of that stuff in there.
Yeah.
But there's more stuff like in the middle when all the chaos is going on that kind of helps even out the, you know, like just help. It's just like one scene to the next kind of in the theatrical version or the way that they filmed it. Acting in the movie, I feel like Rail's back, you know, as the hero. He does a decent enough job. He's a character actor.
Yeah.
The credit really goes to Matilda May, though, because, yes. I mean, like, she, and not just for her body, I mean, that's a big portion of it, but they always credit this in anything talking about this movie, the way that she used her body, like, you know, knowing as, like, the dancer part of it, actually gave, like, this otherworld feel to the character that, you know, you wouldn't have got just by, like, her speaking or anything mm-mm. like that.
It's her awareness.
Yes.
It's got to be that. Also, like we've said in many reviews of women, beautiful women in films, some of them just have screen presence, and she does.
Yeah, that definitely adds to it. I mean, I don't know that anybody else in this movie. Now, Patrick Stewart stands out, you know, it's kind of his over-the-top acting, but he also stands out because we know him from other
that
things
is true,
that he's
yeah.
better in. The actor... Sadly, the actor who plays the Van Helsing type, Falada or whatever, like, he stood out. I mean, he was great as Jacob Marley in that, you know, TV version of Christmas Carol. But, like, I didn't really find his character of the Doctor in this to be really that great. I mean, you know, and that could – I'll chalk that up to the writing part of it, because I feel like they kind of had him all over the place. At first, he's like – all against her, you know, these creatures. He's like, be wary of them. And then later on, because he's being possessed by her or whatever's happening, then he's like, oh, you know, we've got to really, you know, make sure that we, you know, study the. It's weird. Like, he flip-flops back and forth throughout the movie about what his motive is.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that too much. But to be fair, tell me it did not make him look like he was fucking losing his shit.
It did. I mean, he seemed crazy and, you know.
He was all over the fucking place.
And definitely not an expert that you would trust on anything.
No.
Music, it's been too long for me to remember anything that really stood out about the music. Was there anything that stood out that you can remember about it?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of had like this sweeping, like, sci-fi mm-hmm. type feel about it, but
yeah, the orchestrated music was actually pretty decent for the scenes, especially towards the end when you had a lot going on. I think the music was great. That's really all that stood out to me. Everything else I didn't really notice throughout the film or anything like that. Nothing stood out to me, but at the end, whatever they had going on during, I would say, the action was very appropriate to the film.
Now, this is a weird thing that I just want to bring up, because, I mean, they hint at it in the movie, and I think they do a better job of showing the director's cut. Railsback is supposed to be descended from these creatures. Like, at some point in humanity's past, these creatures came to the planet, decimated it, but there wasn't enough humans there for them to wipe out the whole planet. They left or were driven off, and some of their lineage stayed on the planet, and he's one of them. Like, through like a diluted blood. That's why she's attracted to him. That's why they're, you know, at the end of it, she wants to become one with him, because he holds like the potential to reignite their species or whatever.
Oh, it's not just because their crotches perfectly aligned with each other when they stood next to each other.
Whenever they stabbed through, like, they're getting impaled by something, whether it's, you know,
she's getting impaled by something.
Yeah. She's
multiple, probably. It was funny when I was watching that scene, because I was like, their bodies line up. And then I even looked up the height differences, but I'm like, their crotches were like right in the same. Yep. Like, that would not work perfect with me and my husband. I'm way too short. And I'm like, how tall is she? And not only that, like, there's obviously a leg length ratio. Sometimes women tend to have longer legs.
Yeah.
Even if they're shorter than men. So that probably worked out for them. But I'm like, did they plan that? These are the things I think about when I'm watching films, guys. Okay.
It visually, it's fairly striking that they match up perfectly in the genitalia region. I just thought that was an interesting thing as far as like that's the one thing that they really kind of went out on their own. And that's probably from the book, but just like the idea that he's, you know, that there's people on this planet that have like some of their DNA mixed in. That's kind of an interesting concept that they only have, you know, like, or they even barely address really in the movie whatsoever, but anything else you want to say about this before we get into trivia?
No, but there looks like there's an ass load of trivia.
There is. So for her audition as Space Girl, Matilda May had to learn her lines phonetically, like I said, because she didn't know English. In fact, when she was asked to disrobe, she excused herself to call her manager first, afraid that she was auditioning for a porno. It wasn't until she was assured that it was for a science fiction movie that she actually gave in. During the 6 months that she spent in London, England for this movie, she learned how to speak English and even picked up a London accent. She had rubber soles glued to the bottom of her feet in order to avoid cutting them during the scene in which she walks out of the building over the glass.
Oh, God. Okay. Actual, like, glued. Oh, my God.
You're risking a lot just to, especially she's a dancer. I mean, like, you know, that's your moneymaker, you know. Toby Hooper's director's cut was 2 hours and 8 minutes. Then the movie was cut down to 1 hour and 56, the cuts being mostly scenes set in the spaceship Churchill. So you might have watched the actual director's cut.
Yeah, because it was an hour and 42, I think. Well, and that includes the credits at the end.
Yeah. The original unedited European version contains more violent and erotic footage, which TriStar Pictures cut from the domestic U.S. version. It also contains the full Henry Mancini score in place of the occasional Michael Kamen music cues placed in the last minute for the U.S. prints. I said, I messed up and watched the theatrical cut, and I will never watch that version again. It's not worth watching. Hooper came up with the idea of using Halley's Comet in the screenplay rather than the asteroid belt as originally used in the novel, as the comet was going to pass by Earth 1 year following the movie's release.
Oh, that's actually a good idea.
Yep, it's a good way to tie it in so people kind of get freaked out. Patrick Stewart said several times that Toby Hooper was his favorite director that he worked with.
What an honor. Damn. Could you imagine someone like Patrick Stewart saying that about you? Fuck.
There's a lot of people that said that it was cool to work with Toby Hooper because, I mean, he was willing. He was more than some other directors. He actually valued your input. Like, he would, you know, see how he could work it in if it made sense. Hooper once revealed that in the early stages of shooting, they waxed Matilda May's pubic hair off completely, thinking that it would make her look less nude. It didn't. In fact, it was worse because her vulva was exposed, making her look even younger. So they had her grow a bikini strip of pubes back, and then May had to frequently remove her pants and panties to allow Hooper to inspect her.
Fucking disgusting.
Makeup artist, that's a hell of a good job to have. makeup artist Sandra Exelby talked about it in the interview. We had this big discussion about Matilda May. Hooper said, I want all of her body hair off. And I said, you can't do that, Toby. She's a young girl. At the time, she was 18. 90% of the film, she was on camera nude. You cannot take all the body hair away, he said. And he said to that, well, I want the pubic hair as short as possible. And lighten it up, I don't really want to see it. So every morning I was on my knees trimming and coloring and making it look perfect. In some cases, Exelby didn't actually cut it, but simply sprinkled some hairs cut from wigs around May to satisfy Hooper.
Okay.
I feel like we covered another movie where they made the person, wasn't it Linnea Quigley, ironically, in Return of the Living Dead, which was filmed the same year that Dan O'Bannon could have had this movie, but he went to the other one, where they made her shave off her pubes and then said, no, that's way worse because we could see everything. I'm pretty sure that was the case.
I don't remember if it was her exactly, but there, yes, we have reviewed one, or if not more, films where this has been a case. Reminds me of, and I told you about this, where, like, Hugh Hefner didn't like women's labia to, not labia, well, inner labias to be outer, if you will. All the vulva, basically, he wanted it clean and tucked in, and they would tuck in playmates' vaginas. If anything, no roast beef curtains or anything. But at this point, okay, I guess she had to grow back a strip. Like, I get it. But, like, why not just, like, put a merkin on her?
Well, they basically kind of did. I mean, if she's cutting, like, hairs from wigs and that, sprinkling it on there. Oh, yeah, that's true.
And she was wait, what? Oh, my God, that is so funny. I get, just make a fucking merkin. Because it's, well, I guess maybe you still have, like, little strings that could technically show. And then you got to worry about editing that. Okay, they can't fucking, like, glue it on, not on the pubes, like, actually glue it on the skin. And then you don't have to worry about anything.
I don't know. I don't understand. I mean, now, I don't appreciate the 70s look. I'll just throw it out that way. But I don't understand why these directors are every time was like, yeah, we gotta shave them down bald. It's like, what's that look? Like, I mean,
yeah.
I'm
with you guys on that. As a girl, I don't like the completely bald look. I have friends that do that. I had another podcast called Hot Mess Express. That was a whole show. but they get everything waxed off. And I'm like, why? You look like a prepubescent child. That's gross.
That's the thing. That's kind of the gross thing in the back of your mind. And the younger, just like this lady said, the younger they are, the worse that makes it.
Even porn stars have like a tiny little patch sometimes. I mean, the tiniest of patch right above. It's almost like it's, and they put it in weird shapes like a, triangle or whatnot. The tiniest. It's like the size of a thumb. And like, even that is better than nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
So it sounds like Matilda May had a roast beef sandwich. Her vagina was not God's perfect whisper.
It's just funny that both these movies, Dan O'Bannon had some hand in them one way or the other, and both of them had issues with one of the female like big nude scenes or nudity all throughout the movie, where they had like had an issue with, pubic hair. Like, it's so weird that that's like happened across movies.
Oh my God.
The model for the alien spaceship in the movie was an artichoke, by the way.
What the fuck? That's hella funny.
The dummies used to desiccated corpses were later used in The Mummy from 1999.
Oh, that ride at Universal. So fun. Do you guys have that in Orlando?
Yeah.
Oh, it's my favorite ride. I love it.
But that would explain why they have that, like, desiccated, like, they look like mummies. I mean, for years after the film was released, when someone was asked what the first thing is that comes to mind when someone mentioned Life Force, Toby Hooper's answer was very succinct and timid. He said Matilda May.
Yeah, and her fucking vagina.
Yeah, I mean, she only has 7 minutes of screen time in this entire movie. And I can't believe that, because it's the only thing you remember about this movie.
Well, it's probably the only thing you remember, Reverend.
Please tell her. Okay, elaborate. So how much more do you remember? That it feels like she's throughout the entire movie. I know she's not for the scenes where they switch over to the nurse that she's like mentally controlling, but like, it's like Beetlejuice in the original movie. Keaton only had like, 16 minutes in the original movie of Beetlejuice, 17 in the new one.
Yeah.
And it feels like he's throughout the whole thing.
It really does. Yeah. She just kind of pops in. If you ask me what I remember from the film, it's not anything. I don't know why it's so boring. I just remember them having this discussion in this building And it keeps popping up too every time I accent, like every time I go back to the film, it's like maybe it's just because every time I open up my Amazon and I switch to a scene to kind of refresh what I was watching, I keep going back to this scene of them, the three of them just having this yelling discussion. They're all very angry with each other. And I don't know, but it's not Matilda May. And it's not because it's of anything like she is. Of staple of that film, obviously, but I don't know why she's not. Maybe it's because I'm a woman.
Maybe it is. Also, this is the reason. She was, you know, obviously nude for most of the movie, or covered just by like a robe that barely covered anything. But by contrast, for the females out there, because of censorship rules about male nudity, Chris Jaeger and Bill Malin, who played the male vampires, had to have spend what small time they were in the movie with flesh-colored socks over their genitals in case they inadvertently were picked up on the cameras. So, ladies, you didn't get cock in this movie.
Thank God.
We discussed this before. I don't know what woman really likes seeing, I mean, like, hanging dong in movie. Like, it.
No.
Like, they're pushing it more and more that. Well, now, I could see women wanting, like, a male ass in the movie. They are pushing that more and more in movies. But, like.
We like looking at just, a good tush.
But, like, the dick just kind of flopping around.
We don't want to see it hard. We don't want to see it soft. The only time we want to see your wiener is, like, when we're dating or married and we know we're about to get some, and that's fine. That's our everyday wiener. We don't want to see anybody else's wieners. Those are gross.
The tangent.
Pee comes out of those.
Tangent, because we just covered Beetlejuice, yes. And he's in it. But Willem Dafoe, some movie he did, there was something I saw on TikTok about, or maybe it's on Facebook. The movie was weird as shit, whatever it was. I don't remember the name of it now. But he was supposed to be like full on nude in the movie. And the weirdest thing about the movie was that the one scene that he was supposed to be nude, they backed out and said, no, we can't do that. And whenever he asked him why, because he was willing to go, like he didn't care. They said, I'm sorry, Mr. Dafoe, but your genitals are abnormally large and they are distracting and they're making the scene come across in a different way, so we can't show them. That's a hell of a compliment.
What
I'm
a
sorry.
Problem to have, yeah.
So when you see Willem Dafoe, the way that he looks, just remember, he's hung like a horse, apparently. So
I wonder how tall he is, because we always joke between me and my friends that tall, skinny, white dudes just be packing, and they do, and we don't know why, and that's, I'm not dating a tall, skinny, white dude, but, like, because that's just not a world that I could live in, but oh my God, like, and it's not enjoyable either. So I don't know. Those kind of guys do need to marry black women. I hate to say it. I said it. But fuck, man. Like, those women can handle it. And I don't know why. They like it, too.
Yeah. Well, there's those size queens out there. So, I mean, it's. But I just thought, I was like, man, that's a hell of a compliment for Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
sorry,
it's like, we
can't
show you.
Big ass dick is distracting everybody. And that would be a distraction. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's just like a pair of big ass boobies. I guess boobs in general are a distraction to guys. But, like, even for women, like, if I see a pair of small boobs, I'm like, eh, you know. But if I see a pair of big boobies, yeah, it's a distraction and I can't stop looking. So, like, I can get why that would be a thing. But see, based on the next thing you're going to go over right now, would there be a group of women that just randomly show up out of nowhere to watch the scenes? Like, there are guys that see a naked woman on set and just, like, everyone all of a sudden is on set.
No, they wouldn't do that.
We have class.
That's the thing. It's like these poor women have to put up with this shit that I'm getting ready to talk about, yes. Which is, so Matilda May was chatting with cast and crew while waiting to film. She was while she was comfortable with the nudity and didn't bother wearing a robe in between takes, some people joked it was more awkward for them because they had to force themselves to keep looking at her eyes the entire time, and that it wasn't easy because she was a gorgeous teen with an almost perfect figure. Ugh. And during filming of her first scenes, there was suspiciously high number of carpenters and set constructors present, so that the remainder of her scenes had to be filmed on a closed set. later in life, she said in an interview that the nudity was very awkward at first, but she got used to it quickly enough. In fact, her biggest issue was whenever the movie came up, the nude scenes would be all that people talked about, even in her native France, which was the reason for her never to do so much nudity again. Like, they wouldn't stop talking about it.
Oh, my God.
But that's also, like, I mean, it's like the Willem Dafoe story. It's like, what a problem to have. You have a perfect body. Good for you, you know?
That, in the way they described it, a teen with a perfect body. Like, you didn't have to say that.
That's so gross. Yeah, it really
you could have just, you could have said young woman with a gorgeous body. Like, we could have, you had to say teen.
It's Hollywood. You know the story. So we'll just move on from that.
Think of all the naked women that can't film nude because they're on their period.
I don't want to think about that.
Well, you're thinking about it now because I just said it. I'm here to point out the thing. Like, what do they do? Do they wait a week or something for them to stop fucking bleeding?
They would have to. That, or they would have to, I mean, have the highest grade tampons that could be inserted and somehow hide the string. And yeah, I don't even want to think about how that would.
You could tuck it between the butt cheeks. That's possible. Trust me, I'm an expert.
We need somebody to tuck the string again. It's falling out.
The string's out, guys. They have like a set person that specifically places the string. Like, can you imagine that job?
No.
You're like, I don't want to.
There's things out there for all types, is all I'm going to say. But I don't know how those guys, the smell doesn't bother them during that time. Like I don't know. I don't understand that mentality. We'll just move on from that. I mean, Frank Finlay was not allowed to use a German accent for his role because Matilda May, who had never acted in English, was using her voice as the guide in how to act in English. Likewise, Michael Gothard was not allowed to do a German accent for the same reason.
Viva asked the questions. Up.
Maybe, my God in Himmel.
Maybe she was scared. Maybe the German accent actually scared her, and they just churched it up like, oh, yeah, they just couldn't speak like that because, you know, it made her speak like, no. She was like, uh-uh, Nazis.
Well, I mean, they would have that, kind of reaction at that time. For the shot of Space Girl walking up the stairs naked, the shadows were added in post-production to censor her body to avoid getting an X rating because apparently you could see every single thing.
Yes, they couldn't tuck it.
Over 1,000 actresses were considered or interviewed for the role of Space Girl. Toby Hooper said it was incredibly difficult to find an actress willing to play the role because it was basically just walking around nude most of the time and then having sex. He said in a Blu-ray feature that so many of the English actresses who auditioned refused to fully disrobe for the part that they had to extend the search beyond the United Kingdom. At one casting session, a group of German actresses even conspired against Hooper by all refusing to do nude scenes. They later found out that it was one of them that wanted the role so badly that she talked the other ones into doing that so that they would walk out or they wouldn't do it and she would and she looked better by association.
Fuck yeah.
Associate producer Michael J. Kagan said the reason they chose French actress Matilda May, who couldn't speak a lick of English, was because she was one of the few who was willing to strip completely and because her experience as a ballerina helped her move in disturbing ways.
Disturbing ways. Interesting. Okay. Ooh, maybe that song Mysterious Ways by,
You Too?
Yeah. It was based off of her.
That'd be a hell of a story if that was the truth.
Yeah.
After its release, Colin Wilson recalled the author John Fowles had regarded the Magus, the movie adaptation of his eponymous novel, as the worst movie ever made. Wilson then sent Fowles a postcard telling them he had gone one better, the movie adaptation of his novel, The Space Vampires, as life force. And an amusing coincidence, actor Jerome Willis had a supporting role in both films. So a couple of authors like writing back and forth, and it's like, well, my horse movie adaptation was this. And it's like, well, hold my beer. This one was worse than that ever thought about being.
Oh, my God.
Wilson's verdict being, well, at least there's lots of full frontal nudity. So he got that out of the movie, he got nothing else. Olivia Hussey left the movie because she mistakenly thought that she was playing the role of Space Girl, which required too much nudity. Then she was replaced by Nancy Paul in the movie.
Well, the name. Hello.
Well, remember Olivia Hussey was the one that was in Black Christmas, if nothing else. Yeah. She was the main actress in that one. Toby Hooper nicknamed the victims of the space vampires the Walking Shriveled.
What the hell?
Hooper almost lost one of his ears during the shooting of a scene on the freezing cold English moors.
Didn't he have an issue when he was filming Poltergeist 2 where he almost lost a limb or something?
I don't know if he had anything to do with Poltergeist
2. Not Poltergeist. God, which film was it? What am I thinking of? Fuck, it was a Toby Hooper film that we reviewed, but I could have sworn something on set where he almost lost a limb was the thing. Anyways.
Unless it was Eaten Alive, the one with the crocodile or alligator, whatever it was. Editor John Grover said in a 2015 interview that a lot of the stuff they filmed involving Matilda May nude was completely unusable because of censorship problems. And he was surprised they could keep other shots in the film. He said, I mean, Matilda May, when she came down the stairs the first time, I absolutely gasped. I'd never seen such a pornographic shot, not for a commercial film in those days. That sort of thing just was never allowed.
I'm sorry. Pornographic is when there's a penis and a vagina or maybe two women doing things to each other's parts. You know, that's pornographic. A naked woman walking down the stairs, well, sexually and visually a little more than usual, and I get where he's saying, like, for, you know, a commercial film, it's not pornographic.
Yeah, we was raised in different times, though. I mean, like, you're talking about if this guy was filming the movie,
yeah,
that means he was brought up in, like, what, the 50s
okay,
or something?
That makes sense.
So, I mean, you know.
I am positive he had seen more pornographic things than that. And if he hadn't, he had lived a sad life.
Oh, I'm sure he had, but, like, oh, is this? This is the degradation of society. And, you know, our generation was like, okay, we're. Put Skinamax on. What are we doing here?
A wussy.
The Churchill scenes at first took up the first 35 minutes of the movie. Approximately 12 minutes of these were cut, plus some scenes were moved later in the movie and turned into flashbacks. All of this was done against Toby Hooper's wishes. He did not want to mess with the film that way.
I'm glad they did, and they shortened that. Get to the point.
The first movie in Toby Hooper's three-movie deal with the Cannon Group, the others being Invaders from Mars and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2
from
1986. Yeah. Henry Mancini had agreed to do this movie based on the original concept of a 15-minute, essentially dialogue-free opening sequence involving the discovery and exploration of the alien spacecraft and the moving of the three aliens back to Churchill, which he composed a tonal space ballet for.
Ooh.
So. Patrick Stewart shot one of his best scenes, or one of his scenes as scripted, with a dialogue line, "He's been bad." The actor pulled Toby Hooper aside and whispered that maybe saying "he's been naughty" would be better. Hooper agreed, and that's the version they went with for the film whenever they were talking about the guy in the cell, you know.
Good old Hooper letting the actors be themselves.
Hooper hoped to cast Billy Idol as the second vampire, but his touring dates conflicted. That would have been so crazy to see Billy Idol just walk out. It's like, nice day to see my penis.
And he would have been glad to show that thing back then.
He would have. He probably would have back in the day. Makeup artist Nick Maley averaged 70 to 90 hours a week during production, most of it applying makeup to Matilda May's fully nude body to make it look perfect and flawless, even though he admitted in an interview that she was already pretty close to perfect anyways. He joked that he had no issue with applying the makeup. In fact, it was his favorite part of the job.
Oh, you poor, poor thing. I know. Good Lord. God. Perfect teen body.
And I just have such a terrible job just every day applying
so
over
long.
The entire.
It just takes so long to make her look, her perfect body look perfect.
He only spent, you know, he was adding time to that. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, we got to go back to that inner leg again.
Yeah.
Let's go back down here.
Oh, Lord.
Editor John Grover said in the Blu-ray features that when they delivered Toby Hooper's original version to Menahem Golem and Yoram Globus, it was a little bit long. It was a picture that worked. The distributor said the picture was too long and they wanted it shorter. Hooper didn't want it shorter. So Grover left to work on Labyrinth, and Golan and Globus called someone else in to edit, and they just slashed it to pieces. So
wow.
Kind of crazy, though, that the editor of this movie went on to work on Labyrinth of all things.
Which, 1 year later, and I have to say that the effects definitely were better.
The puppetry was way better.
Oh, yeah.
But that was, you know, but you're working with Jim Henson at that point. What
yeah, that's true.
Hooper was very impressed at how seriously the British cast took to the script. So good for them.
Yeah.
He also said the film is about men dealing with a feminine mystique or the feminine terror, as well as men dealing with a feminine inside themselves.
I mean, okay.
Matilda May received an introducing credit, although she had starred in two previous theatrical movies in France. I guess, I don't know. I don't know how I would respond to that if I was an actor or actress. It's like introducing, it's like, bitch, I just did two movies. Like, what?
I mean, fuck it. But that was in France. This is technically an American film, even though it wasn't filmed in America.
Yeah, I mean, it was for a broader audience. Yeah. So, I mean,
bitch, we don't know you out here.
Hooper came up with the idea of incorporating Haley's Comet in the screenplay. Dan O'Bannon was displeased with the end result, as he disliked the addition and would later remark that having Toby Hooper direct a film was comparable to letting Bozo the Clown helm a film.
Oh, shut the fuck up, Dan O'Bannon. God.
An up-close look at the ribbons and medals on the United States Air Force uniform Steve Railsback wore reveals that his character Colonel Tom Carlson is a Vietnam War veteran.
Okay.
According to the Blu-ray documentary, the alien spaceship was meant to be designed like a giant penis.
Hell yeah.
Which is a tribute to H.R. Giger, who, you know, did alien designs.
Giggity.
Full-size models were made of the three nude aliens for the wide shots of them in the glass cases. Toby Hooper joked in the DVD commentary track that Matilda May's body model is a high-ticket collector's item.
Fucking gross. People are the worst.
In the film, the sleeping body of the space girl is hidden in St. Paul's Cathedral. Dr. Hans Filotta mentions that he chose the place because it houses the royal crypt. This seems to be an error, though, because no British monarchs have been buried at St. George's Chapel. The only king buried at St. George's died in 1016, and so they just kind of threw that in there, and it didn't really fit the real narrative. The Cannon Group Incorporated tried to get Sir Anthony Hopkins to play Colonel Colin Kane, who turned it down. They then thought they had to deal with Terrence Stamp, but for some reason that fell through. Michael Gothard screen tested for Kane too, but when Toby Hooper met Peter Firth, he offered him the role. Gothard was very annoyed that he had been demoted to a secondary role, and friends of his have alleged that the whole business was the catalyst for his deep depression that caused his death 7 years later. That's a drama queen and a half.
Yeah,
if that's the phrase.
I'm like, that's a bit much. Like, okay, never mind.
After leaving London, the space girl heads to Yorkshire for uncertain reasons. Yorkshire is a traditional setting for vampire stories. The local city of Whitby was a main setting for the novel Dracula, and Yorkshire locations have since been used in several adaptations and spinoffs.
Okay.
In the film, the vampires have vulnerability to iron weapons, and folklore cold iron was supposed to repel or contain ghosts, fairies, witches, and other malevolent supernatural creatures.
I'm low on iron, so, you know, hook it up.
Despite performing poorly at the box office and being critically panned in the U.S. and U.K., the film did surprisingly well in Japan. Highly influential Japanese film critic Nagaharu Yodagawa gave the film a very positive review, although he spent most of it raving about the beauty of Matilda May.
I wonder if they blurred out her vagina.
Have you seen Japanese animes?
No.
Those people don't. They don't care. Famous manga creator, I don't know, Go Nagai, is said to be a big fan of the film, with May's space girl character influencing the appearance of his main character, Devil Man Lady from 1998.
So is Devil Man Lady based off of Devil Man? That was a huge manga back in Japan.
You can look it up while I'm going through the rest of this. The film's main plot references the appearance of Halley's Comet. With clear night skies and excellent visibility from England, the 1986 appearance of Halley's Comet was actually the least favorable on record. In February 1986, the comet and the Earth were on opposite sides of the sun, creating the worst possible viewing circumstances for Earth observers during the previous 2,000 years.
Jesus.
It was almost invisible from the northern hemisphere in March and April in 1986.
Okay, yeah. Devil Man Lady is the sequel to Devil Man.
Okay, there so, you go.
That's
and Matilda May inspired it.
Wow, that's fucking insane.
In the film, the space vampires can switch bodies with regular humans, either cohabitating the body with the host's mind, as in spirit possession, or displacing the previous owner's spirit. Among the plot twists in the second half of the film is that they also can reshape their new bodies to match their preferred form. This makes them shapeshifters, which is closer to traditional depiction of vampires in literature.
Hell yeah, dude. Give me a bigger butt, some bigger legs, maybe. Keep the waist where it's at. Maybe bring my shoulders down a little bit. You know? I look tense.
The polishing work made by writers Olaf Pooley and Michael Armstrong affected only small parts of the original script. Matilda May celebrated her 19th birthday during the filming of Life Force. She spent 8 hours covered in latex and blood.
Hell yeah.
That was the day that she celebrated her birthday, was when she had to do that scene where they were, she was forming out of blood.
Oh, that poor, poor thing.
And then finally, at some point, Carlson states that the corpses on the alien spaceship were bird creatures. This contradicts the scenes depicting those corpses, as they're clearly extraterrestrial bats.
Yeah.
So whatever he was smoking when he was, he wasn't paying attention to that. He was looking at something
Matilda.
Else.
Yeah. Looking at Matilda May's roast beef sandwich.
All right. What's your rating of this?
I'm giving this one, I'm stuck between like a 2.5 and a 3. It's not low enough for a 2.5. It's like a 2.7 for me. I did not, enjoying this
fair.
Movie. Yeah, I was not enjoying it.
I was going to say it's a 3 for me. I mean, I can't give it any higher than that. And it's, I'm giving it every benefit of the doubt, like for the stuff that it's got in it, but it's not a great movie. It really isn't.
It's not. And my biggest thing is, and I'm going to say it, that it had zombies in it, but this is not a zombie film. It was like, they were just like the backdrop of it.
And I told you that before we covered it. Yes. I was like, it could go either way. So
yes, it's not a zombie film and it's not scary.
No, it's not. There's not a scene in this movie where there's not any jump scares in it, but even if you cut that out, there's not a scene in it where you feel dread or anxiety Mm-mm. or anything like that.
No. And so to me, that was disappointing because I like being scared. I may not like being scared during zombie season. So you think this should have been like a win for me, but I didn't know. I wasn't feeling it at all. I was like, it felt like a chore watching this. So, and that's never a good thing when we're doing a podcast for fun.
I'm going to have that problem when we actually cover vampire season, because I'm telling you that there's like two or three vampire movies that I think are great. There might be five. I'm probably leaving a couple out, but there are so many bad ones out there that are just like, they're basically porn with, like bloodsuckers that I'm just like, I mean, if I was to rattle them off right now, I think I'm like Blade would be a good vampire mm-hmm. movie that's entertaining. Dracula, I don't like the original Dracula that well. I actually think the Spanish version is better if you're talking about a horror movie. But like the Dracula with Gary Oldman, only yes. because he's good in it. Because Keanu, man, he had a bad accent in that movie.
Well, and Winona was good too.
She was decent in the movie. Fright Night's a good movie, yes. both it and the remake. And
Lost Boys,
yep. That'd be the other big one.
I've got only one to add to that, and that would be Dracula Dead and Loving It.
That would be a decent one. And then the rest of the season, we're going to have just a bunch of shit movies. Like, why the fuck are we doing a vampire season?
Oh my God. That's going to be, there's probably more that are less just porn. And I think we'll be able to find stuff. There'll probably be some good Shudder ones.
Well, I'll put it this way. Van Helsing is tolerable just because Kate Beckinsale's in it, and then Hugh Jackman for the ladies. But that's not saying a lot about it.
There's also From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Got to throw that. That is a good one.
So there's going to be other ones that were not. What movie was Kate Beckinsale in where she was the fucking vampire too? And she's
the
like,
Underworld. That one's decent. The first one's decent. So I'll give that one.
Bordello of Blood. That's one of your favorites.
Oh, well, I don't know if it's a favorite.
I'm joking. I was totally joking. I know you like
Angie
one.
Angie Everhart, but not the rest of the movie.
So I think we'll do fine for vampire season. It's going to be hard filling in the weeks, I think, because we're pushing 4 episodes a month at this point, which is insane. But
yeah, that gives me a little bit, I'm a little bit happier about it now because that expanded out, because I was like, oh God, there's Lost Boys, there's Fright Night, like what else?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know,
not just one Fright Night, there's more than one Fright Night, and they did a good job, so from what I remember.
Well, Fright Night 2's been unavailable to really view forever, but it is supposed to be a pretty decent movie.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of movies like Dracula AD 2000 or whatever. God. That are just horse shit, you know, like, I mean, there's so many movies like that.
Exactly. And there are also movies I haven't seen. So
there's one that stars Al Lewis, I think was the guy's name, that was Grandpa in the original Munsters. And he plays a vampire like he did in the Munsters. And it's called My Grandpa is a Vampire. And that one's supposed to be kind of like shitty, but like, you know, tolerable for a kid's movie. I don't know. There's Hotel Transylvania. They're all right. The first one is.
They're not bad. They're actually pretty decent for people that are afraid to introduce their kids to scary things. So
I can just think of better werewolf movies like that I prefer, like when we get to that season.
My all-time favorite is Silver Bullet.
That one's pretty good. That's up there.
Yes. I mean, we're going to see how it ages for me, because I have not watched it as of recently. So
American Werewolf in London's always going to be my favorite, but
we got some Snaps
is good. There's some good ones in that season, but as far as this movie goes, I'm right there with you. I'm tempted on 2.75, but I'm 3 feels decent for me.
Yeah, you probably enjoyed it a little more. At least you had Matilda May. And like I said, I did not like her. I thought she was great in the movie. Usually I'll tell you straight up if I didn't like a girl, if I thought she was annoying or I didn't like her small boobies or something. I don't know. There wasn't anything I have to complain about her. She had a perfect teen body, you know?
Stop saying the teen part of it.
Why do they have to keep pointing out, oh, she was 18. Beautiful.
But we do have found footage zombie movies coming up, and there's some really good ones in those.
We have watched, we're not going to talk about them right now in this episode, but we have watched 2, and holy crap, I did not know one of them existed, and I was like, this is fucking amazing, so I'm pretty stoked about it. I feel like we're getting back into zombies.
Yeah, the zombies that the season's about.
Yes, we're getting back to the real deal here.
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.